You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Can you write it? I do.
Just like that, little Greta told me, down by the coal creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty, beer in the tackle box, out on the flat rock, baiting that hook with only the right look, pour in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide, Papa's going out of sight, even if it takes all night. Ooh, ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner, cause I
good morning, good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-hosts Matt Upton and Greg Golikowski from Ross Fishing Forecast Services. We are rolling into the 8 a.m. hour, talking about, oh my goodness, so many different topics here this morning with regards to ocean surface temperatures, the loop current, all kinds of nerdy fishing information that I am just loving here this morning. And I'm actually going to head straight on over to line one because we've got Dave Westra standing by. And I know he's probably nerding out over there too. So I'm going to grab his call. Let's see what Dave has to say. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Deb. Just like I told Rick said, I hope you have your scientific cap on, and I just realized I don't know as much as I thought I did.
Well, let me tell you, ask away, because these guys definitely, they review a lot of data, and some of the information that they've been sharing this morning is just priceless. Absolutely priceless. So I know, Dave, like we've talked about in months past, just some of the reports that you get with regards to the pelagic species that people are seeing out there, the flying fish that we were talking about. I think that was going back to, what, this summer?
Well, it was actually...
Or was it spring?
Yeah, it was right. It was probably about 3 weeks before the storm is when I'd gotten the report. Mm-hmm. And it was secondhand. It was given to me from, you know, from my son who got it from one of the guys that he works with. But anyway, it was I'll say Augusty, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe early September at the latest.
Yeah.
But you know, it's something that's kind of interested me over the years because we've got fellows that come into the shop, and they're not giving me any super duper secrets, but you know, when you're looking at blackfin tuna, just as an example, yeah, it's always kind of perceived that you got to be out in at least in that 80 to 120, 150 foot range to be able to target them well. But there's a group of guys that come into the shop at certain times of the year, catch blackfin tuna consistently, inwards of 50 feet of water, which is, you can almost see the condos at the beach, you know, from that distance. So there's obviously something that's pulled them in. The food source, actually, you know,
one of those eddies
come in close enough for them to follow.
Yep.
And they come in, and these guys, it's only a couple of times a year, but they got it figured out.
It's really about, you know, the fish are looking for the food. So if you can put them in, and it probably has something to do with the conditions were right that at that time. It'd be interesting to look back. You said August-ish, where offshore here they were catching blackfin pretty close to shore.
No, no.
Oh. That was when they were seeing the flying fish.
Oh, the flying fish. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The flying fish that showed up in shore actually showed up in Charlotte Harbor.
Wow.
Which is astounding, you know. God, we get reports from people that see them out of off of Boca Grande, a couple of miles. There'll be times when people see them. No, but this one gentleman was going from Northern Pine Island Sound to Southern Charlotte Harbor around Turtle Bay and Bull Bay, and as he's crossing the Charlotte Harbor, he sees this mass, and then he sees some fish starting to strike, and all of a sudden these flying fish come out of the water, and you know, in front of his boat, just kind of blew his mind. Now I don't know what conditions even brought them in. I don't know whether that was a a day when a loop current had come in closer to shore. But there are these anomalies that pop up every once in a while that make you wonder what's going on. I've told this story several times on the radio years before, but I'm going to go back. And this is 30 years ago, maybe longer than that. We used to fish in the river at a point in Cape Coral off of Coral Point Road. And my sons and I, we would go down there early on Sunday mornings and fish and catch snook and redfish and jacks and things like that. And anyway, this young fella and his mother used to come down all the time, too. And they came down this one Sunday when we were leaving. And the following Monday, he comes in the shop and he says, you'd never guess what I had on my on one of my hookups yesterday. I said, yeah, what was that? And he says, I had a sailfish. And I said, no, I don't. I think you maybe a sawfish, maybe, but not a sailfish. He said, no. He says it's a sailfish. He says just like the one you have on the wall there. And at that time, I had a mounted sailfish on the wall. Well, I'm still kind of skeptical. And his mom comes in. He says to his mom, he said, Mom, that fish I had on yesterday at Coral Point, what did it look like? She pointed to the wall. She said, it looked just like that fish there. So, you know, this is really, really kind of quirky to have a sailfish up the Clusazzi River. So about 2 days later, a friend of mine that lives back in my neighborhood named Denny Graves, Denny comes in and says, you'll never guess what happened to me. I said, what's that? And he said, I was trolling for for king mackerel between Fort Myers Beach and the Sanibel Light. And he said, I jumped a sailfish. And I says, is that right? And he says, yeah. He says, it's amazing. So I'm going to go 2 days more. 2 days more, this man and lady come in, older couple, and they said, you'll never believe what happened to us this past weekend. I said, what's that? And she said, we were fishing in Captiva Pass, and we hooked a blue marlin. Now, this is all in 1 week.
Well, I bet there was some rhyme and reason why that was happening. There was probably the loop current or an eddy, or the conditions were a lot closer to shore than normal. And then
cleaner water.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're following food, right? So, you know, they can get that far. They can get that far inshore, and they're looking for, they just want to eat.
Now, that's the only time that in all my years here that I've ever heard that coincidence in like a week. In a week period there, but it's obvious they follow the food source, I guess.
Yep.
They get lost.
Yes.
They're so tuned into feeding that they just follow the food.
Yeah, they're following the food, and all of a sudden they're in depths they shouldn't be in.
Because the sailfish are one thing, but the blue marlin is.
Sailfish get pretty shallow depending on where you go throughout Florida.
Right.
But blue marlin is a different story.
That's
oh yeah. Well, about 5 years ago, a commercial fisherman fishing in Charlotte Harbor, a mullet fisherman, as a matter of fact, set his net, and he caught about a 5-foot blue marlin in his net.
Wow!
In Charlotte Harbor, which it's odd. That's odd in itself. The fish probably had to be sick or something, maybe.
That's possible.
Again,
too.
Lost his way.
What I'm wondering is, do you see, Matt and Greg, any significant changes, or do you hear anything from the captains that you speak to, like prior to a big storm event, like strange fish behavior?
Oh, that's a good point. One of the unique things that we get to do and we love doing is talking to our clients and getting fishing reports that helps us learn on what they're seeing, and we can reflect that in our analysis, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if I had any interaction with anybody that said, oh, the fish are, acting weird before a big storm. Certainly afterwards, after big storm and wind event and rain event, then, that changes the conditions quite significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know, it takes a week or two for the ocean to settle down and for those species to come, maybe come back and get to their normal habitat.
Yeah.
But do you have any, Greg, any interaction?
Not really. I mean, a lot of it's dependent on pressure, really, when you have big storms going through, you know, obviously a hurricane approaching,
the pressure
is lower.
The barometric pressure fluctuating.
But yeah, I mean, well, and maybe part of it is when those events are coming through, I mean, it's, for lack of a better explanation, there's not a whole lot of guys fishing.
It's true. They shouldn't be.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Dave, what are you seeing? So give us the report from the river, because based on some of what I've been hearing, the snook fishing up in the river has been pretty darn good lately.
Yeah, and it all comes after Ian, and the water was so stirred up that the food was everywhere, and the bait was everywhere, and the river was like kind of on fire for the folks that could get to places. Of course, our biggest problem now is people can't get to the places that they would like to really, really get to because of things that are broken down, and you know, I had some guys come in that were telling me the other day that they tried to go fishing towards the Sanibel Causeway, and the authorities wouldn't let them. All they want to do is go wade fishing. Well, the authorities wouldn't let them do it. The authorities chased them off and told them the water was too much. I'm going to use the loose word crap in the water.
Dirty.
Taking a real bad chance about getting in the water and getting something infected. But the river itself has really, really been good fishing, particularly our snook, Jackson, even the ladyfish fishing has been. There have been some areas that you can't keep them off your hook. You know, they're just feeding because there's still the water still stirred up. There's still a lot of food in the river now. So fishing for us inside has been reasonably good. The offshore fishery was good right after the storm and continues to be really good for the guys that are running offshore. Now I don't know how extensive our red tide outbreak is that we have offshore. I know that the storm that we had last week over on the East Coast didn't do us any favors because of the way the winds were counterclockwise. It pushed everything up into Charlotte Harbor and Pine Island Sound, and now we're dealing inshore with that fiasco. We just need a good flushing here and get it out of here, you know. The thing is, you know, and believe me, guys, don't have any scientific background at all, but with all this stuff that's stirred up in the water, when things do calm down, all of the stuff that's in the water now is going to settle down on the bottom, and it's going to sit there, and things are going to clear up, and it's going to look real nice until our next event, and then it's going to stir that stuff up that's off the bottom. We have a huge, in my mind, we have a huge problem with the stuff that's left over from these storms. The nutrients and things like that just settle down on the bottom. And again, when we get a wind event or a water event, it stirs it all back up, and we got huge problems.
Yep, you're exactly right. That's what the storms. The worst part of the storms is it stirs up these nutrients, and then it just the phytoplankton, the bloom, the algae. That could be a good thing for you know, for fishing sometimes, for bait fish, but it's a bad thing when it spurs your red tide and your toxic environment as well.
Talking about a food source, Deb, somebody passed this on to me last night about this guy that went into a bar. And when he walked in the bar, he looked up, and there was some pieces of meat hanging from the ceiling. So he asked the bartender, he said to the bartender, "What are those pieces of meat up there?" The guy said, "They're steaks." He said, "Well, what are the steaks doing on the ceiling?" And the bartender said, "Well, it's a contest we have here. It says if you can get those steaks off of the ceiling, you get free drinks for the rest of the week." He said, "Well, suppose I can't get them off the ceiling." And they said, "Well, if you can't get them off, try to get them off the ceiling, can't do it, then you have to buy drinks for everybody in the bar for a week." And the guy thought for a minute. He said, I don't think I want, don't want to do it. And he said, well, why is that? And he said, well, the stakes are too high.
Oh, oh, ba-da boom.
Kind of heard that one coming.
All right, anyway.
Oh, Dave.
Oh, well.
So yeah, and then changing subjects from the stakes. What kind of reports are you hearing from Dave? You said some of the offshore reports have been good lately. So what are the guys catching, guys and gals catching out there?
Grouper. The amazing thing is that particularly the yellowtail.
Yeah.
The yellowtail snappers. I mean, we're talking fish, yellowtails 19 inches to 24 inches. Gag grouper in the upwards of the close to the 30 inch range. And this is in waters generally 65 to 85 feet of water. Not terribly far offshore for a lot of the anglers that have smaller boats. It's not like they're having to run to 150 feet. Although, like the guys talked earlier, I think in the around the 7:30 hour, but the distances of some of these smaller boats are running because they got the horsepower. They can get out there fast. If they got any inclination that they're going to have good weather, some of these guys are running out in boats that are as small as 16 feet, they're running out to 100 feet of water. I don't, you know, that's not in my, I don't think I would want to chance that myself. But the guys are, the offshore fishery has actually been really good. And with this temperature change that we've had here, I look for a good push of fish to come down from the north here, but probably really pretty soon. And the thing about it is if the water temperature cools off a little bit too quick, they're going to go right by us. I'd like to see us go into a warming trend in about a week, just for about a week to 10 days, and that'll kind of hold some of those fish that are moving from the north to the south to hold off of our coast here for a while so we can get after them.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I know that it's getting to be that time of year when, you know, under normal circumstances, the stone crab traps have been out for a while and they've been collecting some crabs and barnacles, but not many anglers have been able to probably get out there and target triple tail given the circumstances. Are you still there, Dave? Dave, did we lose you? Hello? We lost Dave!
Oh, no,
oh,
Dave.
No!
Oh, no.
Well, he's on his cell phone, so that happens.
Oh, yeah.
That happens. But, oh, well, there we go. We'll play Dave's tune. We got to head off to a break anyway, right? It's about that time, Rick. All right, we're going to head off to break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back!
From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water, this land was made for you and me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host Matt Upton and Greg Golikowski from Ross Fishing Forecast Services. It's hard to believe, gents. An hour and a half already gone. See, I told you.
I know.
Like,
I did.
3 hours. What are we going to talk about for 3 hours?
I was like
it is going to go by so fast. Just you wait.
This is cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just a ton of information this morning and talking about all of these different factors that you incorporate in your fishing forecast service. The water temperature breaks, currents, history of ocean fronts, the bottom topography, the biological quality of the water. And I know we were just talking about with Dave some of the nutrients that get stirred up from the bottom when we see some of these storms come through. And one of the things that I happened to be looking at on your website was, I think, one of the maps that you had, or you had a comparison from Hurricane Harvey, a before and an after. And you also did the same thing after Hurricane Ian.
Yep.
And that's up on your website for folks, yep, to look at. So tell me a little bit about, real quick, kind of what we're looking at when we're looking at those images. And I'm going to share the link, okay, after the show on the Facebook page.
So before the hurricane goes through, and you can typically see the water is warmer, stable, and near the coast, it may not be as green or dirty water. But once if you look at the website and those images, then we did a few images after the hurricane, 3 or 4 days after the hurricane went through, and also then like a week or two after. And you can really see how the water cools several degrees, the sea surface temperature signal cools. And then also,
yeah, that was amazing just to see how significant of a drop, yeah, in temperature there was following the storm.
Yeah. 3 to 5 to 6 degrees in, yeah, places. And then also because of the wind event and the rain, and then it stirs up the water, and that, you know, your water is greener, dirtier, even a brownish. Mm-hmm. And then you add to that the outflow of the surge coming back into the ocean with the dirty water that mixes with everything that's on land, and you have a really kind of sometimes a toxic, you know, situation with the dirty water. And that may be good for some species for fish inshore, but a lot of times offshore, that, you know, the larger pelagic fish, they need to see their bait.
Their prey.
Yeah. So if the water is real dirty, you know, they can't see the prey as well. So sometimes fishing isn't as good after hurricanes inshore for certain species
how long generally?
Yeah, it depends.
I'm sure a lot, but
sometimes up to a week or two before, you know, water starts to clear up or longer.
Got it. Okay, I'm going to head over to line one because we've got Nick Davis standing by with 239 Flies. I'm going to grab his call. Hey, Nick.
Captain Debbie, top of the morning to you.
Back at you, my friend. What's going on? You back from your escapades in Mexico?
Escapades, shenanigans.
Yeah.
You know, just all of the happenings. Yes, we are unfortunately back from shooting our guns at the moon in Mexico and drinking way too much tequila and having way too much fun. But let me tell you, there's some baby tarpon down there. That's a pretty cool fishery.
Yeah, I saw some amazing pictures, of course, on your Instagram. So it looked like you guys had just a really productive and fun trip. Good for you.
It was really cool. The you know, I didn't get to fish the Everglades 40 or 50 years ago, but I imagine it's very similar.
What it was
to
like?
yeah, we went to Campeche, which was, you know, at the northwest top of the Yucatan Peninsula, and yeah, like, I just, water was really brown, but like whiskey clear, you know, ice tea clear. And I mean, you could see 30 and 40 pound tarpon just swimming around. There was plenty of 5 and 10s, just, you know, they weren't exactly, you know, the fish were a little bit tougher to catch than you might think. They were still a little bit educated, but still very willing to eat the top water, and way too much fun. So we had a great time.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad to hear you got away for a little bit of a break. So now, is that, yeah, area starting to become a lot more popular with fly anglers?
You know, I when we were there, there's a beautiful little downtown section,
uh-huh,
and the amount of American and European tourists there were, you know, almost more than, you know, the residents. And, you know, fly fishing is a huge part of that area because they've got, like, so much good fly fishing.
Uh-huh.
It's not super diverse. They've got, you know, big snook and little tarpon. Like, that's what they got.
Yeah.
Not a lot of redfish. You know, the offshore fishing, you know, is kind of, you know, it's there, but, you know, obviously not with a fly rod. And, but a bunch of amazing food, too. Like, this place could not be cooler. Could not be, like, cleaner, safer, and more charming. Like, if, you know, and the cool part about it is, you know, unlike Puerto Rico, you know, the fish were smaller, you know, 20 to 30 pounds were the biggest fish that we saw, maybe a couple of 40s.
Yeah.
So you can travel light, you can throw an 8-weight, you can throw a 9-weight, and it's a good place to, you know, like, you don't have to be a world-class, you know, mega accomplished angler to go there and, you know, catch fish. Like, you can be a novice fly fisherman and have a great time there and catch a ton of fish.
So, Nick, did you guys stay at a lodge, or were you staying
at
an Airbnb kind of thing?
No, we actually stayed at Enrico Puglisi, popular name in fly tying and fly fishing.
Oh, yeah, well.
is opening up a lodge, and it's going to be open to the public for, I think, 2023. So he starts actually booking it in spring of 2023.
And so you got the sneak preview.
Oh, yeah, we did. Let me tell you something. Old Enrico was a chef before he was a fly tying guru, and let me just say, he still got it. He made a red snapper piccata that was just, it was too good. I was like, all right, time out. Like, we're going to need the recipe for that fly and that dinner, like, right now. Like, let's get a fly tying and cookbook going here. Like, we're missing out. The world needs this, Enrico.
Heck yeah, awesome stuff. Awesome stuff.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun. We'll have more information on that very shortly. The lodge is called Casa Clarita, named it after his mother. And we'll have plenty of info on it at the shop. It's a really cool place. It could not be more pretty and charming, like, just absolutely stunning. You walk into the place and you're like, you kidding me? Like,
yeah, and is it, from Florida, that's a pretty easy trip. I mean, how long was your flight down there?
I mean, it was direct from Miami, and we spent more time in the car than we did on the plane.
Yeah. And reasonably priced overall in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah. And very reasonably priced overall in the grand scheme of things. I mean, as far as, cool, you know, international travel goes, I mean, I don't think the plane ticket, you would have spent more on a ticket to Puerto Rico or the Bahamas for sure.
Yeah. Well, very, very cool. So, and what's the update at the shop? What's going on there? And do you have any reports at all coming in from the guides? I think it seems like a few more. I'm getting more and more reports that are trickling in every week. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, no, it is. We had David and Chris got out this week. Did pretty well too. Jumped some tarpon, caught some redfish. You know, we're still, I think all of us are still at the shop, or just waiting for a break. You know, after Ian, and then after this red tide situation that we've got going on right now. Like, this is just not great.
No.
But we're definitely kicking our way through it. You know, kicking and screaming our way through it, and. Yes, we did have some good reports come in this last week. You know, I think this cold front probably messed it up a little bit, but I'm sure it'll probably be back to normal here in maybe a couple of days once this wind and cold kind of chills out just a little bit. But yeah, Chris and David had a pretty productive week. A few tarpon in the air, a few snook to the boat. Nothing too crazy, but, you know, better than most. So
yeah,
they're out there. You just got to kind of poke and pick around for them and, you know, and dodge the bad water.
And the obstacles. There's still a few of those.
And
but it looks like they're making some progress in terms of cleaning up the inshore areas and the mangroves, which is very encouraging to see. So we're still taking all those small victories.
It is. You know, this was an absolute doozy for all the listeners that, you know, might have just got back in town this week. Or,
yep.
You know, just, I mean, man, that was a doozy. Like, we're going to be picking up after that one. Because, I mean, you rode around the 10,000 Islands. And I don't know when the last time you rolled around the 10,000 Islands was, Debbie. But, I mean, there's still, you know, there's still landmines out there from Irma. Like,
yeah.
there's still mangroves in the middle of bays that, you know, Irma put there. And, you know, like, that's not a house.
Yeah, no, you know, in fact,
mangroves aren't exactly a house.
I was down there fishing with Captain Jim before. It was the week before, a week or two before Ian came through, and that was the last time I was down in that area. And he was showing us some of the areas where there were mangroves and trees where you could still see where Irma cut through. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No,
I hear what you're saying.
It's going to be a minute until it's all back to normal, and it probably will never be the way that it was. So,
yeah.
But, you know, little by little.
Little by little. And I know on the positive side, I know Greg was out with Captain Matt DeAngelis in Estero Bay this past week, and they got on the sea trout. They were catching some snook, obviously, being very careful about the debris that's out there because there still is some.
Sure.
But the reports from their fishing trip were pretty good, all things considered. So that was encouraging.
It ain't all doom and gloom. There's plenty of good stuff out there. Just got to open your eyes and get out there and do it.
Yep. Amen to that. So anything coming up at the shop that we need to know about, Nick? Give us the scoop before we let you go.
We do. We got one thing coming up. It's going to be, I want to say it's the 30th. I've got it on the website already. It is our Wednesday the 30th, the last Wednesday of the month. We've got our 239 fly tying night and ugly Christmas sweater party.
Woohoo!
So,
it's that time of year.
Yeah, let's go. It's the best one of the year. I love the ugly. It's the ugly sleeveless sweater party.
Which makes it even that much better.
It really does. You know, I'm really in it for that. And I can't wait. It's usually my favorite fly tying night of the month or of the year. So. Yeah, that starts 7 o'clock, but I mean, honestly, get there at 6 because we'll be having eggnogs and pizza and, you know, listening to Mariah Carey Christmas album and it'll be after Thanksgiving this year, which will be great because normally we do it before Thanksgiving and, you know, like I hate putting the cart before the horse. Like, we're going to do Thanksgiving and then we're going to do Christmas.
Yeah.
So this year, like, the dates just fall that we can actually do it. So.
I feel like there was a little bit of an extra rush to put up the Christmas decorations this year. Like, people were just really trying to cheer themselves up a little bit earlier than usual, given the circumstances. But
sure, especially Hobby Lobby, putting them up in July.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah, no, I love it. Good spirit. Let's go.
All right. Well, good stuff.
I got that info on the front page of the site, and I'll remind you about it next week, too.
Sounds good.
Other than that, Debbie, it was wonderful talking to you. You guys enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Likewise, my friend. We'll catch up with you next Saturday morning. You take care. Have a great weekend.
Sounds good. You too.
Bye. Bye, Nick. Take care. That is Nick Davis calling in with 239 Flies. And we're actually going to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back.
Now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
Just take those old records off the shelf.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-hosts Matt Upton and Greg Golikowski from Ross Fishing Forecast Services. We've been talking about things like water temperature, currents, the history of ocean fronts, bottom topography, and the biological quality of water, and how that all translates to fishing, both here in the Gulf and then also on the East Coast and in other areas around the state. Well, you guys actually, so Matt, you were saying that you have a lot of customers or clients that are farther to the west in the Gulf, too, so like around Louisiana, I would imagine.
Yep.
Those areas.
The farther that guys have to run for your pelagic fish, that's how we can really help you out, because we can tell you, you don't want to waste fuel and time. So,
right.
you want to know if you're going in the right direction for the best probability to catch what you're targeting.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. And I know we were talking a little bit on break about just if whether or not your service could be beneficial to those people who are fishing for bottom species, primarily those who are out there targeting pelagic species are using your services. And so speak a little bit to bottom species and how your service could or could not translate to that type of fishing situation.
So we're looking at satellite imagery, and so you really can see the conditions surface and near surface. So most of our clients and guys that use us, anglers that use us, are targeting your offshore pelagic, you know, highly migratory species.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot of our clients use us for bottom fishing because we don't have any data that's accurate and consistent enough
on the water temperature on the bottom. Yeah.
What we do offer is structure, bottom structure, which helps out a lot. And that's what a lot of people probably target near shore, right? Is mm-hmm. where your traditional bottom structure is, and that we can help you out with that. But, you know, what we see on the surface of the ocean is lots of times a good clue on what's happening below the surface too. So if there's a strong enough front, it could go down deep in the water column, and your bait fish will congregate along that boundary, even down to the bottom structure.
And if there's bait fish there,
if there's food there, there's going to be some bottom fish. But most of our clients don't use us for bottom fishing.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for explaining that. Because I know a lot of times, and we were talking about our mutual friend, George Poveromo,
yep.
on break, you know, anglers are going out there and they might be, you know, they're targeting the pelagic species, but then maybe the next day or even on the same trip, they decide, well, I'm going to do a little bit of bottom fishing.
Yes.
For grouper or snapper or whatever. So a lot of times you've got, you know, you're making those trips where you're targeting two different types of species.
Right, right. If something's not working out for you, then you try something else.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. But it's good to know that, I mean, obviously you've got those components. If all the ingredients, all the productive ingredients are there on the surface, there's a good likelihood that they're there beneath the surface
as well. You're exactly right.
That's a great point.
And we'll give you different options too, of different locations we think are good that day for fishing. So if one place isn't working out for you, then you can go to the next location.
You can pivot.
Yep.
Yeah, we look at what inlet you're coming out of and try and give you, you know, a bunch of different options. Correct.
For that day.
Yep.
That's great.
And thank you to George Poveromo. I know he's been on the show before and probably fished with you guys.
Yeah,
he's been a longtime supporter of Roth's and uses us from time to time. And but so thank you. He's the one that hooked us up, right?
He did. Thank you, George.
We got to
get in touch with Matt.
Yeah, we always provide him slides and materials for his seminars.
Saltwater seminar series he does in the winter.
Yeah. Well, and I could see how that would be so helpful. Just, I wish we could do show and tell here, but yeah, that's not how radio works. That's why I'll actually post those links up on the Real Talk Facebook page. All right, we're going to head over to line one because we've got Andrea calling in from Michigan, and she's got a question for you guys. So let's see what Andrea has to say. Hey, Andrea, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Absolutely. So what's your question for Matt and Greg this morning?
Yeah, Matt and Greg, it's awesome to hear you guys. You got a lot of Roth fans in Michigan, and I'm just curious. I mean, clearly you're on a South Florida station this morning, but wondering if you do any work in the Great Lakes for us fishermen up here. So thanks for your answer or any insight for us, and I will go ahead and take my answer off air, if that's okay.
Yeah, thanks, Andrea.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Andrea. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. I'll defer that to Matt. He's the Michigan.
Yeah, funny.
You're the
Lake
Great
and
Lakes
ice
expert.
Fishing expert. Yes.
I can't remember if we covered this in the first hour or not, but I actually live in Michigan. I'm from Michigan. My wife and I are from Michigan, right north of Lansing. We grew up there. And that's where I, and we talked, and Debbie, that's where you got your hooked on fishing
up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what a small world, but that's what my son and I, we fish the lakes and the rivers and the Great Lakes occasionally, but not very often. And so that's my first love is fishing in Michigan. So I'm glad you called in. But we have the technology to do analysis on the Great Lakes. We've never had, years ago, we tried to start up a service in the Great Lakes and help anglers there. But it never really took off. We have the capability. One of our problems that we've talked about earlier in the segment is clouds. So especially, there's lots of clouds in Michigan, as you know, certain times of year. So it becomes very difficult to see the Great Lakes conditions. And so and like I said before, the resolution of the satellite images and data we use is 1 kilometer. So we can see features, we can see water mass breaks and conditions in the Great Lakes. And we could certainly help folks out with certain tournaments and, you know, salmon, lake trout on where the best conditions are, but we just haven't had that demand. But maybe we can start that up. We certainly have the capability. And then inshore in the larger lakes in Michigan, inshore, the resolution just isn't high enough for us to give useful data for inland lakes, but certainly the Great Lakes. Yep.
Yeah, because, I mean, geez, the amount of water you're talking about in the Great Lakes, too. I mean, that's a lot of water to cover when
yes.
you're fishing.
Yep. And so if you can figure out.
If you can hone it down.
Like Greg said, left, yeah. right, or yeah. straight, it really helps you out. But if there's, you know, if there's a demand, Andrea, let's get some folks to get on our website and give us a call. We'll start up the service there. But I have to say a quick shout out to, I'm not sure if Andrea, you're a Michigan or Michigan State fan, but we have a group of friends listening at the Michigan State University tailgate right now. So I want to give a shout out to them and thanks for listening and go green. I know one of your co-hosts, during the week is from Indiana, right? So Michigan State's playing Indiana today. So I want to just rub that in.
That's Craig Sheeman. Yeah, actually. And it was awesome. I got
We're
to see those
you,
guys last
Craig.
Night. They were broadcasting live from Duffy's, which is one of the restaurants at Stony Brook Golf Course here. So they did a live broadcast yesterday afternoon. And it was great to get over there and see them in person for a couple of hours. And yeah, so Craig is from Indiana originally. And Pete is from Boston, I believe Boston. So, yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
So you could definitely talk sports with them.
Yep.
You'll have to text them one of these days. Yeah. Great. Two great guys. And Chris, too. Chris Beasley. So yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm kind of wondering the bulk of your business. So I know that you guys work with a lot of tournament anglers, which makes perfect sense because,
they want to get
oh my
that
gosh,
edge, right?
I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars are at stake, right?
Millions.
Yeah. Hundreds now. Of
millions.
Thousands
yeah.
and millions.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you're... Ooh, actually, we got to do this when we come back from break, right, Rick? I'm getting so excited about all of these questions that I have that I'm completely losing track of time and running late. When we come back, we'll talk about the tournament side of it. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back.
They paved paradise and put up a fucking lie with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise, put up a fucking line.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.